Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast taking a leap into the unknown. My name's Corey Hazelhurst and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hi Corey.
Now, exciting times on the podcast, listeners. Not only have I got Steve to talk about the Constitution in previous episodes, now Steve is talking about sport.
Hooray.
Now, we're talking about football this week. That's the one with the round ball, not the oval ball.
So that's what the one where everybody's dressed in white with the big, like, knee pads and... That's a round ball, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's that one.
Yeah.
I'll explain during the music. We saw about a month ago the demise of Bury Football Club, which is my grandma's team, and we're going to talk about the political implications of that. So Bury, I'm going to try and say Bury Football Club as the authentic northerner on this podcast.
I will just say Bury.
Sorry, Andy Burnham. Bury were founded in 1885 and they were expelled from the Football League after 125 years because essentially they couldn't afford to raise a team. I think the police have since in fact launched an investigation into the financial goings on in the club. And there's three main big political implications of the nonsense around Bury and what's going on. And the first one we're going to talk about is the nonsense around financialisation. So the last owner of Bury Football Club was a man called Steve Dale. Now he bought Bury for £1 in December from Stuart Day. We'll get onto Stuart Day in a second. But Steve Dale took out a mortgage on Gig Lane, which is Bury's ground, for £3.7 million. And that mortgage was from a firm that was called Capital Bridging Financial Solutions. I know, listeners, it sounds completely legit to me too. And Capital Bridging Finance Solutions, they mortgaged Gig Lane in turn to a Malta-based company whose lenders are based in the British Virgin Islands.
Nothing dodgy about that at all.
No, absolutely not. I'm sure they were doing the same in the 1920s.
Absolutely.
Now, of that £3.7 million, 40% of that the football club never saw. Wasn't used to pay players or fans or anything. Well, not pay the fans, obviously, but you know what I mean. Maybe invest in better pies. Because 40% of that was paid as introduction fees to unnamed third parties. And it's one of the reasons the club wasn't rescued. So there were people who were trying to buy Bury to rescue it before the club was expelled from the Football League. One of the reasons they didn't buy the club is because of this mad mess and morass of financial holdings and financialisation in the club.
Yeah, because essentially any individual who understands their finances is going to take a look at the situation where you've got, you know, 40% of a mortgage going missing to unknown parties, and looking at, you know, mortgages being basically held in the Virgin Islands as a massive red flag. Like, it doesn't take that much financial knowledge to look at this and go, oh dear, this is not a good place to be investing your money in any form.
Well, no, especially considering the amount of problems that some football clubs have had with their stadiums. So, obscure Birmingham reference, we can get in pretty quickly. St Andrews this season is hosting Coventry Football Club because there are issues at the moment with the Rico Arena. And so the people who, in Coventry Stadium, the football club for whatever reason hasn't got its football fixtures in Coventry. So Coventry Football Club is having all its fixtures in Birmingham. And for those of you who are from London, Coventry and Birmingham are not the same place. It's not just a homogenous hodgepodge of the West Midlands. Even just the hint of British Virgin Islands is just... I know, it reminds me of 2008 again, really.
Yeah, it absolutely does. There is a definite whiff of the financial crash about this sort of activity that seems to have been going on with Bury FC. Genuinely reeks of, you know, the failure of self-regulation. It very much just stinks of the finance flaws not necessarily actually catching up to the reality on the ground. Because this is the sort of thing which was going on in 2008, and you know, this sort of stuff should have been stamped out, but because we're not necessarily dealing with banks, it's clear that that hasn't been looked at here, and that a mortgage lender or whatever form of businesses are the these financiers are based around haven't been hit by that same legislation and haven't been hit by that same level of regulation, which means there's been a massive oversight in terms of finance regulation in the UK.
That leads us on to the second point of the political implications of Bury Football Club, and that's the fact that self-regulation really hasn't worked. And you hinted at that already. So the owners of football clubs and directors of football clubs, they have to pass what's colloquially called a fit and proper person test. They also have to prove that they've got funding for the football club. Now, Steve Dale, who's the guy who bought Bury Football Club, he didn't have proof of funding. He wasn't able to provide it, and in fact, literally could not fund the football club. That's why Bury was expelled from the Football League. However, what's happened in this case, though, is rather than try and put in sanctions against the individual owner, they've put in sanctions against the football club instead.
Yeah, which, you know, in a lot of ways seems absolutely bizarre. But then, to be honest, it's one of those continuing themes of kind of like the failure of legislation. You know, quite well known is the fact that despite all of the damage caused by the 2008 financial crash, no one went to prison for it. No one was brought up on charges for it because everything was legal. I think the only country that's even attempted to do anything on that level was Iceland. US, UK, France, Germany, all throughout all kinds of different strings of different colours, different types of political aligned governments, no one has actually really been able to kind of hold anyone properly on an individual level to account. And the laws haven't really been changed to do that either. You still have this notion of that a company is separate from the individuals running it, which is in many ways completely farcical. But what they've also failed to do is make changes to the law so that it actually covers people if they do screw up in the future, and that they can be held accountable for their actions and not just get away effectively scot-free. Because we have in the West a notion that a company is separate from its directors and its owners. And in a lot of ways that does make sense, absolutely. Because if you are, you know, somebody who's entrepreneurial, you're much less likely to try and set up a company and try and hire people and expand your company if there's a risk that you are going to be labelled with the debt yourself and make yourself bankrupt. That's why we have limited companies as a concept. But at the same time, it's clear that has gone too far in the other direction, where individuals are, if not outright breaking the law, skirting it very, very close in terms of the legalities of things, as well as it just not being, you know, arguably moral or sustainable for the countries and the companies themselves in terms of their activity. Which means we are left with a situation where effectively, these arseholes can't be touched. And that's a failure of government to update regulation, because we still seem to be stuck in this mindset that a company and its directors are different.
An issue with that, I think, is that a football club isn't a company, and therefore the loss of Bury Football Club leaves a massive hole in the town of Bury, partly because it's the friendships that are there, it's the attachment to a place. You know, it's why Coventry playing its football matches in Birmingham is such a problem, because as MK Dons shows, you can't just franchise out your club. You know, that rips the heart and soul out of a club in the community. And so I think part of the problem is treating these clubs like companies in that respect just massively, massively underplays it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, football clubs have almost like an integral role in British society and British community in their local areas.
And I think the other thing about the regulation, maybe the parallel between now and 2008, is that previous crises just didn't address the root causes of later crises. So in 2002, loads of football clubs, including my own, which is Oldham Athletic, went to the wall because of the TV deal collapsed. In 2002, ITV Digital said they put lots of money into clubs and then folded. And a lot of clubs, including Bury at the time, went to the wall. Bury went into administration. And at the time then, football fans were going round having fundraisers, you know, anything from handing out buckets at games to holding other fundraising events, and save the club then. I think another issue is almost a bit of a fatigue of these, because there's been so many clubs who've gone through financial issues. Meanwhile, of course, the Premier League has got richer and richer and richer and richer, and the inequality between different clubs have got more stark, which in turn means that lower league clubs are trying to find their sugar daddy who will invest millions and billions of pounds to try and take their club to the big time.
Yeah, because owning a football team is, you know, a symbol of wealth. It is, you know, an accessory to an awful lot of these people. A lot of them don't actually care about the game or the teams themselves. They are just in it because everybody else is doing it, and it's a cool thing for them to own.
I suppose the other thing is, self-regulation doesn't really work, does it? There's a reason why we don't self-regulate drugs. Because it's important to have a proper drugs authority. As people on the left, we don't necessarily believe that if you leave everything to its own devices, everything works out okay. Actually, that's not how things work.
Okay. Now, and I think the interesting thing here is, like, it's not like generally speaking, finance is not actually a poorly regulated industry in terms of the amount of regulation that's there. There's actually quite a bit. Like, I've had to do marketing for financial companies before, and just the amount of hoops that we had to jump through for just, you know, basic advertising. Nothing even particularly, you know, making massive claims or anything, just really standard stuff that we would do for every other client. We were either prevented from doing because of regulations, or we had to go through a very long and arduous process to going through it. So it's not a lightly regulated industry or sector. It's very heavily regulated, but it just seems to be missing a lot of the right kind of focus.
Speaking of that, so the other, we talked about the two qualifications you in terms of the self-regulation of directors of a company. So one of them is you need to have the money, which is kind of important. The other thing that you need is, colloquially, it's called the fit and proper person test. And essentially means that,
long and short, it doesn't really necessarily mean that much, but really it just means you've not been convicted of offences in the past 15 years or so, which are related to running a business. It also means that you're not bankrupt, and that's about it, really. There are a few other bits and pieces in there, but,
and I think in football, for instance, one of them is you can't have been disqualified as a director or as a football official.
So there are kind of like sectoral tests for these kind of things as well, where necessary. It's really easy to set up a company and become a director. That, to a degree, is quite intentional, because you want to encourage people to create businesses and create jobs. One of the reforms that Vince Cable brought in when he was business secretary...
Which particular iteration of Vince Cable is this?
God only knows. But one of the reforms that he brought in was to basically open up the avenues to registering to become to start a limited company. So before, you used to have to go through a handful of specifically regulated and designated companies who would act as your agent and take you through the process and get everything set up for you. They would handle all of the paperwork and all of that sort of stuff, and they made a lot of money doing that. Since Vince Cable came along, that has changed massively, and you can set up a business now for a whopping £15.
I think this is former chief economist for Shell, Vince Cable. That's the iteration of Vince Cable. Just to give you an idea of how wide the fit and proper person test in football is. So, former owner of Blackpool Football Club, Owen Euston, a high court found that he illegitimately stripped the club of over £26 million, and yet he's still not disqualified from being a football club owner under the fit and proper person test.
Yeah, which kind of tells you everything you need to know about the kind of the standards for this. They are...
Wallace's.
They're just too specific, with no notion about necessarily the details of the sector itself. And it does seem to be far too hell-bent on the notion of you have been done something illegal. Blatantly, that needs to be in there in some form. But as we've seen time and time and time again across all different kind of veins of politics and the economy, illegal does not equal good. Something being legal does not equal it being good.
Well, I think and not regulating something properly and assuming that the forces of goodness will take over does not work.
No.
As well. The other issue, I think, in terms of the politics of all this, is more specifically the problems that are facing towns, and I think they're often ignored. And to try and find an avenue into this, we're going to look at Bury's previous owner. So we talked about Steve Dale before, and he bought the club for £1 last December. He bought the club for £1 from a guy called Stuart Day. Now, Stuart Day, in his business career, he was a property specialist, so he specialised in building blocks of student flats. If you've been to any university town or city, I'm sure you've probably seen them. They're generally city centre-ish or just outside, very big, generally quite executive, and generally the rent of them is quite expensive.
Yeah, almost exorbitantly so. And I say that as somebody who had to spend their first year at uni in one.
I suppose, were they run by the university?
No.
Were they privately owned?
It was privately owned.
And I find often it's international students who will go because it's easier, I suppose, in trying to find your own, own place. Now, Stuart Day, so he's the last but one owner of Bury, he borrowed money to help finance the club. He used the ground gig lane as security in that. So he took out a loan with a 10% rate of interest. And compound interest caused that to balloon to 138% interest that was being paid on that loan.
That's quite impressive, actually, isn't it?
Yes. Day's company, essentially, his property company collapsed. And there's a few different reasons for that. One of them is because he was getting financing from Lendy. L-E-N-D-Y, literally lend with a Y on the end. I can't believe it wasn't successful.
Hey, I think you'll find that's some high quality marketing right there.
I'm sure it was. I think I'd have done it with an I, maybe.
No, that would be I lend.
Of course it would. That's why you're the professional. So this is a peer-to-peer lending scheme. That collapsed. And the other reasons for the property company collapsing, one of them is partly because of Brexit and the smaller numbers of international students who are coming to universities, which meant that there was fewer profits. The other thing that happened, obviously, was the tragedy at Grenfell Tower. Because of the cost of putting cladding on these buildings, turns out there wasn't proper fire regulations on these buildings. And
there's
not
a
proper
shock.
Cladding. And it was the cost of having to add that to lots of buildings as well. There's a side note of there's a massive scandal here because The Guardian has done, and David Conn in particular, done some very, very good work on this. And they interview people who invested with this property company who've lost all their savings. So there's one person who put his pension, well, his life savings, into financing a flat through this property company who's now lost everything. So there's a separate scandal. It's not quite the icing on the cake. It's more like, I think, the raisins in the fruitcake of the Bury Football Club scandal is just the financialisation and people buying stuff with money they don't have. But there is an issue generally with towns feeling left behind. I mean, there's one of the reasons why there's a big disparity in terms of the Brexit vote between generally, again, not always in the West Midlands, but Remain voting cities and Leave voting towns. And a lot of that is attributed to not just austerity, but also economic inequality.
Broadly speaking, everything does seem to kind of revolve from an economic stance. At the very least, around cities, even like some of the things like the like metro mayors and policies like that are actually all basically about connected policy to bring in things so that the cities can see more benefit from it, because the cities are necessarily the ones which are driving a lot of the economic growth. And then the idea is that that then can get redistributed either through the market and properly, or via some form of government, you know, intervention through active, you know, taxation and then gifting it to the towns.
It's almost like free market economics and trickle-down economics doesn't work.
Almost, yeah.
You look at where Bury is in Lancashire in the northwest of England. Other clubs there, say like Bolton, who are also, I mean, by the time this episode comes out, could well be being wound up as well. Oldham Athletic, as I say, my hometown club. Clubs like Preston as well. When these clubs were being founded in the late 19th, early 20th century, these were wealthy mill towns. Oldham was famous for cotton mills, lots of other manufacturing power bases as well. These were towns of economic opportunity. That's not the case now.
No.
Those industries have gone and they have not been replaced with anything. And if they have been replaced with anything, it's as James Budworth's Hire hired book shows, often it's maybe Amazon factories or call centres, very, very precarious, stressful jobs, essentially. I think that's one of the things, we talked about football clubs being a good for the community. It's not just a business, it's not just an economic institution, not just a sporting institution, it's a bag of identity. It's where people can go on a Saturday with their son, you know, the whole going to the football on a match day. So memories are founded. We talk about combating loneliness and mental health while having a place where you can go every week. Very, very important for lots of different reasons. But also, if you have a look at the other problems facing Bury, and the council leader, in fact, has said that if the club is lost, it would be a nail in the coffin of the town. You consider the fact that since 2010, Bury Council's lost £85 million, which is 61% of the council's budget. Bury Council has no money. It's like most councils across the country, can just about do the skeletal level service provision, and sometimes not even then. Well, the North West will be hit by a no-deal Brexit to the tune of 12% hit to their economy, which is insane. The hit globally in 2008 was 2%, so that's six times that. It's about two Great Depressions. This is an area where the council has no money to invest in housing. The government has not been invested in housing. The government has been cutting money nationally and locally. So it's hardly surprising you're going to have local, if you've got a local business that is actually willing to finance the building of houses and flats and accommodation, it's no surprise they're going to get a nudge and a wink and a green light, no matter how dodgily they raise their finances.
Yeah, absolutely, because councils are desperate to actually attract and invest any form of business to do pretty much anything. That's especially true if you're a small town where you don't necessarily get that much attention, because pretty much all of the infrastructure is pushed towards cities, all of the transport links are pushed towards cities. Therefore, you end up kind of as a business person going, well, I might as well just go to the cities. That's where everybody can get to. That's where the talent will flock to.
And then that's half the problem, isn't it? So everyone flocks to the cities, but then leaves the town behind.
And then you end up with some areas, which you will see kind of people move out from the city into the town. So classic example of this, again, not necessarily an obscure Birmingham reference, but a Birmingham reference. People leave Birmingham and go move to Solihull.
Traitorous bastards.
This is true. But they move from the city itself into a still relatively close and practically part of Birmingham, as much as they would hate to admit it.
The amount of hate mail we're going to get now. It's going to be worse when you said it wasn't a coup. But the thing about transport links, though, then, is very, very important, because in about 10 or 15 years' time, Birmingham city centre will be essentially gridlocked with the amount of cars. Now, a lot of people drive in from Solihull to Birmingham.
Yeah.
There are lots of buses between Solihull and Birmingham. It's just those buses take an hour and a quarter.
Yeah.
Again, there's a train, but it's a train and therefore full to buggery. Whereas if you had a decent tram or a bus route that took, rather than taking an hour and a quarter, actually took 20 minutes, that would help solve that problem as well. But again, there's just no investment that's being put in.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's one of the things that that the Metro Mayors, in theory, have the ability to do something about. I think Andy Burnham up in Manchester has actually tried, or at least started talking about various kind of like public transport initiatives, trying to kind of connect up Greater Manchester in a way that it hasn't necessarily been up until now.
I think Andy Burnham just likes connecting the north
with
other
true.
Bits of the north. Yeah. So eventually he'll be able to get from one bit of the north to the other in 5 minutes. Yes. If we finish off, just some of the solutions, and again we've gone to the Bible of social democracy, which was Labour's manifesto in 2017. We have a couple of policies on football. I mean, one of them is that Premier League should invest 5% of its profits into helping the grassroots game, which again makes a lot of sense. I'm guessing it's pretty similar to what the ECB have tried to do in cricket, where essentially the ECB took cricket off free-to-air telly for lots of money from Sky, which then goes into the grassroots game. Of course, that's meant that fewer people now watch cricket and take up cricket, and fewer younger people take up cricket because they can't actually see it on television. Football's kind of avoided having that problem because a lot of football is still on free-to-air telly.
Yeah. And it also, in a lot of ways, holds a part of the national psyche that cricket does, despite cricket being the quintessentially English game. it's not as big and never has been as big as football with the broader society, I'd have thought.
That is possibly the most incorrect thing you'll ever say on the podcast. I can't even begin. No, I'm not going to try. The other big Labour policy, and Labour has started bigging this up a little bit, given the nonsense that's going on at Bury and Bolton, is essentially helping fans run football clubs, turning more football clubs into cooperatives and putting more fans on boards, which, again, I think makes perfect sense.
Absolutely, that makes perfect sense, because fundamentally, if you're saying these things are integral parts of the community, then let's make sure that the community is involved in their running and has a say in how they're actually being treated as an institution. But that is a pretty solid policy.
In Germany, it's pretty standard, and it's become, and there are more and more clubs in Britain that are doing that as well, which we should probably talk about in a different episode, maybe about cooperatives. In the meantime, though, we are back next week, or maybe in the midweek, talking about some Brexit nonsense. In the meantime, our website's notenoughchampagne.com. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. Our Twitter handle is @nochampagnepod. James Cram designed our logo, and Dave Tepp is responsible for our theme tune, Plucky Good Times. My Twitter handle is @paperbackwriter.
Mine's @acousticradical.
Thanks for listening, and happy plotting. Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast taking a leap into the unknown. I forgot my name.
Start again.